Chapter 71. It is the eve of the longest day of the year, also the eve of the Battle of Vitoria. The English army in the peninsula, and their Spanish and Portuguese allies, are bivouacking on the western side of the plain, about 6 miles from the town. On some high ground in the left mid-distance may be discerned the Marquis of Wellington's tent, with Generals Hill, Picton, Ponsonby, Graham, and others of his staff, going in and out in consultation on the momentous event impending. Near the foreground are some hussars sitting round a fire, the evening being damp. Their horses are picketed behind. In the immediate front of the scene are some troop officers talking.
First officer, this grateful rest of 4 and 20 hours is priceless for our jaded soldiery, and we have reconnoitered largely too, so the slow day will not have slipped in vain.
Second officer, looking towards the headquarter tent, by this time they must nearly have dotted down the methods of our master stroke tomorrow. I have no clear conception of its plan, even in its leading lines. What is decided?
First officer, there are outshaping 3 supreme attacks, as I decipher.
Graham's on the left, the compass which he crosses the Zadora, and turns the enemy's right.
On our right, Hill will start at once, to storm the Puebla crests. The chief himself, with us here in the center, will lead on by the bridge's trespuance over the ridge there, and the Mendoza bridge a little further up.
That's roughly it. But much and wide discretionary power is left the generals all.
The officers walk away, and the stillness increases, so the conversation at the hussars' bivouac, a few yards further back, becomes noticeable.
Sergeant Young, 19, I wonder how Storcastle is looking this summer night, and all the old folks there.
Second hussar, you was born there, I think I've heard thee say, sergeant.
Sergeant Young, I was. And though I ought not to say it, as father and mother are living there still, 'tis a dull place at times. Now Budmouth Regis was exactly to my taste, when we were there with the court that summer, and the king and queen a-wambling about among us like the most everyday old man and woman you ever see.
Yes, there was plenty going on, and only a pretty step from home. Altogether we had a fine time.
Third hussar, you walked with a girl there for some weeks, sergeant, if my memory serves?
Sergeant Young, I did. And a pretty girl was. But nothing came on.
A month afore we struck camp she married a tallow chandler's dipper of Little Nicholas Lane. I was a good deal upset about it at the time. But one gets over things.
Second hussar, 'twas a low taste in the hussy, come to that.
Howsomever, I agree about Budmouth. I never had pleasanter times than when we lay there.
You had a song on it, sergeant, in them days, if I don't mistake.
Sergeant Young, I had, and have still. 'Twas made up when we left by our bandmaster, that used to conduct in front of Gloucester Lodge at the King's Mess every afternoon.
The sergeant is silent for a minute, then suddenly bursts into melody.
Song, Budmouth dears, aye, when we lay where Budmouth Beach is, oh, the girls were fresh as peaches, with their tall and tossing figures, and their eyes of blue and brown. And our hearts would ache with longing as we paced from our sing-songing, with a smart clink, clink, up the esplanade, and down, too, they distracted and delayed us by the pleasant pranks they played us. And what marvel, then, if troopers, even of regiments of renown, on whom flashed those eyes divine, oh, should forget the countersign, oh, as we tore clink, clink, back to camp above the town.
Three, do they miss us much, I wonder, now that war has swept asunder, and we roam from where the faces smile to where the faces frown, and no more behold the features of the fair fantastic creatures, and no more clink, clink, past the parlors of the town?
Ivy, shall we once again there meet them? Falter fond attempts to greet them? Will the gay sling jacket, 20, glow again beside the muslin gown? Will they archly quiz and con us with a sideways glance upon us, while our spurs clink, clink, up the esplanade and down?
Applause from the other hussars.
More songs are sung, the night gets darker, the fires go out, and the camp sleeps.
Scene 2, the same, from the Puebla Heights, it is now day, but a summer fog pervades the prospect. Behind the fog, is heard the roll of bass and tenor drums and the clash of cymbals, with notes of the popular march, The Downfall of Paris. By degrees the fog lifts, and the plain is disclosed. From this elevation, gazing north, the expanse looks like the palm of a monstrous right hand, a little hollowed, some half dozen miles across, wherein the ball of the thumb is roughly represented by heights to the east, on which the French center is gathered. Beyond of Mars and the Moon, the opposite side of the palm, by the position of the English on the left or west of the plain, and the Ine of Life by the Zadora, an unfordable river running from the town down the plain, and dropping out of it through a pass in the Puebla Heights to the south, just beneath our point of observation, that is to say, toward the wrist of the supposed hand. The left of the English army under Graham would occupy the ounce at the base of the fingers, while the bent fingertips might represent the Cantabrian hills beyond the plain to the north or back of the scene. From the aforesaid stony crests of Puebla, the white town and church towers of Vitoria can be descried on a slope to the right rear of the field of battle. A warm rain succeeds the fog for a short while, bringing up the fragrant scents from fields, vineyards, and gardens, now in the full leafage of June. Dumb show, all the English forces converge forward, that is, eastwardly the center over the ridges, the right through the pass to the south, the left down the Bilbao Road on the northwest, the bands of the divers regiments striking up the same quick march, the downfall of Paris. Spirit of the years, you see the scene, and yet you see it not. What do you notice now? There immediately is shown visually the electric state of mind that animates Wellington, Graham, Hill, Kempt, Picton, Colville, and other responsible ones on the British side, and on the French King Joseph stationary on the hill overlooking his own center, and surrounded by a numerous staff that includes his advisor Marshal Jourdan, with, far away in the field, Gazan, D'Erlon, Riel, and other marshals. This vision, resembling as a whole the interior of a beating brain lit by phosphorescence, in an instant fades back to normal. Anon we see the English hussars with their flying pelisses galloping across the Zadora on one of the trespuants in the midst of the field, as had been planned, the English lines in the foreground under hill pushing the enemy up the slopes, and far in the distance, to the left of Vitoria, whiffs of gray smoke followed by low rumbles show that the left of the English army under Graham is pushing on there. Bridge after bridge of the half dozen over the Zadora is crossed by the British, and Wellington, in the center with Picton, seeing the hill and village of Arran is in front of him eastward, to be weakly held, carries the regiments of the 7th and 3rd Divisions in a quick run towards it. Supported by the hussars, they ultimately fight their way to the top, in a chaos of smoke, flame, and booming echoes, loud-voiced Picton, in an old blue coat and round hat, swearing as he goes. Meanwhile the French who are opposed to the English right, in the foreground, have been turned by Hill, the heights are all abandoned, and the columns fall back in a confused throng by the road to Vitoria, hard pressed by the British, who capture abandoned guns amid indescribable tumult, till the French make a stand in front of the town. Spirit of the pities, what's toward in the distance? Say. Semi-chorus I of rumors, aerial music, fitfully flash strange sights there. Yea, unwonted spectacles of sweat and scare behind the French, that make a stand with 80 cannon, match in hand. Upon the highway from the town, to rear an eddy of distraction reigns, where lumbering treasure, baggage trains, padding pedestrians, haze the atmosphere. Semi-chorus two men, women, and their children fly, and when the English over high, direct their death bolts, on this billowy throng alight the two far-ranging balls, ringing out piteous shrieks and calls from the pale mob, in monotones loud and long.
semi-coruscite, to leftward of the distant Dinriel meantime has been driven in by Graham's measure over mastering might. Henceforward, masses of the foe withdraw, and, firing as they go, pass rightwise from the cockpit out of sight. Chorus, the sunset's lance and aqueous shine upon the English knapsack line, whose glistering bayonets incline as bends the hot pursuit across the plain, and tardily behind them goes too many a mournful load of those found wound weak, while with stealthy crawl, a silence wraps the rear of all, cloaked creatures of the starlight strip the slain. Scene 3, the same. The road from the town,
with the going down of the sun, the English army finds itself in complete possession of the mass of wagons and carriages distantly beheld from the rear, laden with pictures, treasure, flour, vegetables, furniture, finery, parrots, monkeys, and women, most of the male sojourners in the town having taken to their heels and disappeared across the fields. The road is choked with these vehicles, the women they carry including wives, mistresses, actresses, dancers, nuns, and prostitutes, which struggle through droves of oxen, sheep, goats, horses, asses, and mules, a Noah's Ark of living creatures in one vast procession. There enters rapidly in front of this throng a carriage containing King Joseph Bonaparte and an attendant, followed by another vehicle with luggage.
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.